Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Not even a life-altering explosion can stop a hero during difficult times. Attend the opening ceremony at Firehouse World in February 2011 to hear Marine Corporal Joshua Blyle share about a bombing in Iraq that took both his legs. You'll leave motivated to face whatever challenges may come your way when you're out on your next call. Get complete details at firehouseworld.com.
Welcome to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com podcasts. My name is Peter Matthews. I'm the editor of Firehouse.com, and we have Rich Gassaway, the host of the show. Welcome back, Rich. Glad that we have a little one-on-one time on the podcast again this month. You've been on the road for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, and you've interviewed a lot of people, so it's great to kind of have you back and have the opportunity to talk with you for a little bit.
Yeah, Pete, it's great. It's great to be back in a one-on-one format. I've received a lot of really nice feedback from the guests that I've had on the program, but I've also got some pent-up issues that I want to make sure that I get the opportunity to talk with the listeners about. So I'm really looking forward to this one because this is a solo show. I haven't done one in a while, and I'm really looking forward to it. So thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. And before we get going, like I said, you've been on the road quite a bit, coast to coast, different countries, some I haven't even found on the map yet, teaching. So what do you have coming up in the next couple of weeks that, maybe some of your listeners aren't aware of, but they'll have the opportunity to come see you live?
Sure. Well, December's normally a slower month because of the Christmas holiday and people wanting to spend time close with their family and such. So it's kind of a slower time for me. But on December 9th and 10th, I'm going to be in Lenexa, Kansas, doing a program on fire ground situation awareness. Lenexa Fire Department is sponsoring that. If you go to my homepage and click on the upcoming events, there's some information there about how to register for that program. It's a one-day program offered two times, once on the 9th and then repeated again on the 10th. So there'll be some information there about how to register for that. Then in January, I'm going to be January 14th and 15th. I'm going to be at the Utah State Fire School in St. George, Utah, again talking on fire ground situation awareness. January 21st to 23rd, I'll be at the North Dakota Firefighters Association Conference and Summit in Bismarck, North Dakota, again talking on fire ground situation awareness. January 25th in Hillsboro, Oregon, again situation awareness and fire ground command. January 26th through the 28th, Lakewood, Washington, and then rounding out January, on the 30th of January, I'll be at Mahoning County in Poland, Ohio, doing a leadership symposium there, and again on the topic of fire ground command decision making and situation awareness. So pretty busy January. I hope there will be some listeners who will be able to maybe tap in for one of the live programs, and if you do, make sure that you introduce yourself to me. I really like the opportunity to meet and talk with listeners, and I appreciate all those who have reached out to me in the programs this year.
All right, great. Good to see a nice variety of programs there. And then also we have Firehouse World coming up in February, and you'll be teaching a program there?
Yeah, I'll be doing a program actually on March the 2nd at Firehouse World in San Diego in the morning. I'll be doing a program on the mental management of emergencies, talking about the challenges of making decisions in high-stress, high-consequence environments. And I think we're going to maybe do a live version of Leader's Toolbox there, too, aren't we?
Yes, we'll have the details up in a couple of days here as far as the date and time and the room location for that. Stay tuned and definitely check out the January podcast where we'll have all the details. We'll also post those on the podcast player page as we move forward. Again, a great opportunity to kind of sit in, see the program live, and if you do have any questions, you can bring them to the audience and ask them of the participants. So, well, let's break into this month's question, which if you haven't seen the headlines in the last couple of weeks, you're definitely missing something when you read Firehouse or any of the other sites. In just the last couple of days, we've had several headlines regarding budgets doing more with less. Cincinnati chief in hot seat over budget cuts. New Jersey mayor hopes to call off the public safety layoffs by using a SAFER grant. New Jersey City plans to lay off a third of its firefighters. In Massachusetts, Lawrence, Massachusetts, which has been controversial the last few months, they're bringing in mutual aid almost every fire because the city's cut the budgets. You hate to say it's a great topic, but it's a very timely topic, and unfortunately for a lot of departments, what we're going to discuss today is vital to their daily operations. The question that we have, it says, our fire department has been forced to cut expenses, which has resulted in some staff reductions, some vacant positions going unfilled, and a reduction in the number of firefighters responding to structure fires. This has caused our members to express concerns for our safety, to which the standard reply we get is, learn to do more with less. It's a nice mantra, but how do you feel that, in a practical way, that this does not jeopardize our safety?
Yeah, this question actually came not from an email, but from somebody at one of my live programs who caught me at the lunch break and said, can we go to lunch? I'd really like to talk with you. And, of course, you know, the program focuses on situation awareness and decision-making and the challenges. And one of those challenges that can impact situation awareness is staffing. So I could sense that he was welling up with frustration, and he had something that he wanted to get off his chest. And this very topic was the conversation at lunch, and while we were having lunch, he actually called people over from several other tables and had them join in on the conversation. And so I sensed just from talking with this group, who represented firefighters from a number of communities, that there is a deep concern about what is happening and what this means for firefighter safety. I think that in some instances, I think that our organizations can learn to do more with less. And the reason I say this is that during the abundant times, you know, when finances are good, economy's good, budgets are growing, our staff tends to grow with it, as good leaders seek to fill opportunities to start new programs or to provide new services, and I think that's a essential part of growth of an organization. But as times become lean, that might force organizations to reflect on the core services and consider perhaps shedding, if only temporarily, at least still consider shedding some of those things that are not the essential services that the department, fits the department's mission. Now, this idea raises a host of potential conflicts as cities contemplate their priorities and what's most important. For example, is planting flowers in the parks more important than, say, a fast paramedic response? Is snow removal on a park pathway more important than having a police officer on patrol? For us who provide the essential services, I can hear the collective duh being thought of by the listeners. But unfortunately, in some cities, flower planting and pathway cleaning are higher priorities than public safety. And we, the public safety community, can debate this all day as to why this isn't fair, but in the end, we may have little impact on the political decision-making process. What I want to focus on in this discussion is the safety of firefighters when confronted with the do more with less mandate that I know that some of you out there are facing, because I've after that conversation at lunchtime, had the opportunity to talk with many, many, many more firefighters, and I keep hearing similar themes. I think the first task may be to figure out what the core services are and try to preserve those services which are core to the fire department's mission. Now, you could try to engage your city management and your elected officials into this discussion as to what core services are the most important. However, I'm told by many fire department leaders that have attempted to do this that they haven't always been met with successful outcomes, because elected officials and politically minded city managers balk at the notion of having to prioritize services. For them, it's like the example that I would use is it's like asking them, which of your children do you like the most? You know, they're not going to reveal which programs are their favorites. Note that I use the word favorites versus priorities. Electeds and I think politically minded city managers, I think many of them are single-minded in that they are focused on how to stay popular enough to get reelected. And for those politically minded city managers, it's how to stay popular enough to remain employed. And when you understand those motives, then you maybe begin to understand how they think about favorite programs instead of priority programs. Now, I'm not justifying it and saying that it's right. I'm just simply making an observation. Now, I don't want to lump all elected officials and all city managers into the category of being focused on their popularity. So long as we acknowledge they exist, they may be the very people who are trying to get us to where we prioritize services if their focus is you know, truly on what's best for the community. What's at risk here, even if you're able to get the electeds to prioritize, is they might remain focused on their popularity and the programs that are the most popular in the community, not necessarily the programs that are the most essential, may be the ones that rise to the top of the list. I was told recently of a fire department in New England where the electeds supported a levy to build a new library, but didn't support a levy to build a new fire station, even though the fire station, as it was reported to me, was in much worse condition. Now, why might that happen? Well, when you think about it from the perspective of being popular, many more voters will probably use the library on a yearly basis than use the services of the fire department. So if the electeds wanted to, you know, measure where to throw their support based on, you know, what would come back to them in the way of support, it might be to support the library versus the fire department, even though for us, you know, the priority would be no duh, you know, the fire department should be a high priority, but we're, you know, we don't necessarily think in the same way that they think. So the task of determining the core services may be better left to the professionals who understand the impacts based on the service and safety versus politics and popularity. So who are the professionals? Well, that's, you know, the fire and police and EMS providers in the community. The second task may be to shed those non-core services in some priority order based on the impact of public safety. For example, if the department hosts birthday parties, while it's nice to do and good PR to do, shedding that service would have a relatively low impact on public safety. Now, you could defend that by saying, well, at birthday parties, you know, we provide public fire prevention information to the kids and to the parents, and some do. So, you know, there is some, you know, good besides just PR that can come out of that. But, you know, at the core of the service, that might be something that could, at least temporarily, be set aside. These kind of programs can be hard to give up, especially if they've been ongoing programs whose success has been built on the hard work and dedication of loyal members of the department who've, you know, put their you know, blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak, into developing programs that have become popular among the community, and maybe even popular among the firefighters who provide those services. As with the analogy above on the electeds having to decide which child they like best, deciding which program or service to give up is the equivalent of having for maybe a firefighter to decide which child would they give up for adoption. Now, you love all of your children very much, and it would be a very emotionally challenging task, but you have your marching orders, and status quo isn't an option. So you're going to have to give something up you know, as your budget's get reduced. I mean, being able to operate status quo is not, you know, the organizations who've been able to do that, it's not necessarily the ones that I'm speaking to for this show. The third task is to determine if the core services can be maintained at the same level with the resources available after all the non-core service cuts have been made. And this really gets to the heart of the issue of firefighter safety, is can the department continue to provide its core services at the same level while preserving firefighter safety? If the cuts involve reducing the very resources that provide the core services of responding to emergencies, then service delivery is going to have to change as well. If cutting non-core services is likened to giving a child up for adoption, then cutting core services might be the equivalent of having to make a decision as to which child you might take off of life support. Now, I don't mean to be graphic with this example, but anytime a fire department has to reduce its core services, it's going to hurt deeply. And it's going to hurt the emotional psyche of the firefighters who, you know, have sworn to protect their community with all their being. And you know, I don't think there's any profession out there who is any more dedicated to preserving the lives and property and the well-being of their communities as firefighters, and I'll throw police officers and EMS providers in as well. When this happens, the members that are affected by this are very likely to go through the steps of a grieving process, you know, the same as you might go through if you lost a loved one. I mean, to cut into the core services is to really give up something that you love with all your heart and soul and you're dedicated to. And, you know, there's you know, steps to the grieving process. You know, it goes denial, anger, bargaining, and then depression, and then finally acceptance. And, you know, if you want to learn more about, you know, the steps of the grieving process, you certainly can, you know, do a internet search and see and read more about that. I'm not here to necessarily speak to you about, you know, in detail the things that happen at each step of that process. But know that when you give up something that means so much to you and it hurts you so deeply, that you will grieve and you will go through a process like this. Many of the firefighters and the officers that I have talked to along the way have experienced reductions that have impacted their core services, staffing reductions that have resulted in less frontline personnel to provide core services, which in turn has impacted safety. And talking with them and observing the things that I'm seeing firsthand, I see that they're grieving. And they're trying to journey through these stages. I see members of the fire service who are in denial. I see members who are angry. I see and hear of those who are trying to bargain their way out of the situations that they're in. I've seen those who are depressed over the situation that they're facing. What I have seen little of, but far less of, is acceptance. You know, when you get to acceptance, you have a curtailment of your anger and your bargaining and your depression, and you accept the loss and try to find ways to safely provide your services within the confines of the new reality that you're facing. That standard reply of learn to do more with less, articulated by the person who posed this question to me, is someone who is, this person was, you know, in denial, and they were certainly angry. You know, the boss who says just learn to do more with less is denying the mere fact that the loss has occurred, and the person who's hearing that is becoming very angry over that. They haven't worked through the stages yet, and they haven't come to acceptance, and this is the foundation of a significant issue that we're facing in the fire service. We don't necessarily think of things in psychological terms, you know, as to how these things really impact us. I mean, safety aside, we're a hurting profession, and you know, we have to find a way to work through this. And I'm gonna take you through a few more steps here and give some advice about how I think how we can do that. But I'll pause and give you an opportunity here, Pete, to chime in on this.
Well, I think if you go back to the original question, you know, practical ways to do it without jeopardizing the safety. Maybe we'll tackle that after the break here. But, you know, I think that is a valid question. And for the firefighters' families, too. You know, now they know that, you know, when they go to work, there may have been four people that they were working with now, and then they're down to two, and the next station over is closed. So the mental wellness of that responder when they go home has to be dramatically affected, whether it's just a day in a station where they didn't have a fire, or you know, whether they had a fire and you know, the close call that we hope that we never get seems to be getting closer and closer every day. You know, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that those you know, the more we cut into our ability to do our core services, the closer we're coming to having not only near misses but hits, and I'll talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break, because the sooner we get to the point where we accept our new reality and find ways to manage through that, I think that the safer our new way of existing becomes. And we'll talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back here in just a second.
The best way to learn a new skill or improve upon one you already have is to actually put it into practice. Choose from 6 hands-on training classes at Firehouse World 2011 in San Diego this coming February. Classes include trench rescue, firefighter survival, air management, extrication, and more. Learn by doing. Complete details available at firehouseworld.com.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on firehouse.com podcasts. Rich, the second half, going back to the original question, learn to do more with less. And as the question here is, it's a nice mantra, but how do we do that in a practical way that does not jeopardize safety? So what can fire departments do to ensure their safety while they are operating on the fire ground, with reductions in staffing, equipment, and everything else?
Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road with this particular issue, Pete. So long as the organization is working through the steps of grief, it is really hard to get to acceptance and moving on towards solutions. And that's where they really need to be, is getting to acceptance and moving toward the solutions to keep the firefighters safe. So how does a fire department know when it's reached the stage of acceptance? I think you've reached this milestone when the key players in the organization decide to have meaningful discussions about how service delivery should change as a result of the loss. In other words, you get beyond the denial and beyond the anger and beyond the bargaining and beyond the depression and say, okay, this is our world now. So how are we going to change what we do to keep us safe? I think to think that you could continue to provide the same service the same way after suffering a significant loss of resources is living in denial. It's the same as losing a valuable and contributing member of your family and thinking that life will go on just as it always has, without any impact and without making any changes. That wouldn't happen. And it can't happen here. This brings me to the fourth task, and that is determining how to reduce the service levels while maintaining safety. So we're to the point where we're saying, well, we're going to have to reduce the service levels of what we do. We're going to have to accept that we can't do more with less. We can't even do the same with less. So we're going to have a meaningful discussion about how to do less with less. If you have one less truck company on the street, or you've closed a station, or you've reduced the number of firefighters on a company, you have to reduce the service levels in a corresponding way. To think that you can get the same work done with less resources is the equivalent of saying that you can travel the same distance in your car on 10 gallons of gas as you could travel with 15 gallons of gas. Surely, in that example, you could do some things to improve the efficiency of your vehicle, but caution should be advised against taking shortcuts that impact safety. It's tempting, very tempting, to be lulled into believing that there are more efficient ways to do the job while setting aside safety. back to the car example that I used for a moment ago. You know, if your family's going to go on a camping trip, let's say you can only afford 10 gallons of gas, hypothetically, each way. And you know from previous experience that the trip takes 15 gallons of gas each way. You can take shortcuts to improve your fuel economy. You know, you could say run the car without air conditioning. That one is the equivalent of some fire departments who say, well, we'll just turn off more lights, and that'll reduce our energy bills. Yeah, it will, but probably not enough to make up your shortfall. I remember years ago when my fire department, one of the fire departments that I was involved with, was having some significant budget challenges. That was one of the solutions offered up. Well, we'll just make sure that we turn the lights off around the station more. We can do that. And in the course of a year, you know, that's going to save us maybe $1,000 or two off of our budget, which is, you know, okay, but it wasn't nowhere near what we needed to be able to make up for the shortfall that we were having. You know, running your car without the air conditioner, yeah, it might get you just a little bit further down the road, but it still leaves you very short of your destination. Maybe you could decide not to pack heavy things, you know, and if the vehicle's lighter, then you can go further, you know, so you don't pack the tent, or you don't pack the cooler, or you don't take Aunt Martha. Each of these decisions that you make of the things that you don't take have an impact, and those impacts need to be considered, discussed, and adjustments need to be made. You know, if you're going to go on a camping trip without your tent or your cooler, you're going to have to adjust something. Again, using just a hypothetical example. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is the starting point for the meaningful discussion that needs to be held. If you have less resources than you can conceivably provide service with, then you're going to get less done. It's also conceivable that if you try to get the same amount of work done with less resources, that it will lead you to overextend yourself or others to overextend themselves, to take shortcuts, or to increase risk-taking. And this is where it becomes safety. The safety issues really rise to the surface when you overextend yourself, take shortcuts, or take increased risks. A discussion needs to be held among the operational staff about how to accomplish this task of doing less. The expectations have to be adjusted, and there needs to be a healthy dialogue among the operational personnel about what the new expectations are and how they impact street performance and how they impact the customer. You know, this as I have traveled around and talked with these people about this issue, I said, what kind of discussions have you had among your operations staff about how to deal with this? None. Well, what have you done in the way of how you change your tactics? Nothing. What have you done in about how you change your response? Nothing. You know, it's, you know, again, back to, you know, the anger and denial. They're not making any meaningful changes. When you have this conversation, expect this to be a difficult discussion. I don't think any firefighter worth the boots that they wear are going to want to cut street-level service to the customer, and the organization should do everything possible to prevent that. But as we've established in our discussion here, sometimes it gets to that point, and all the pride and all the denial in the world isn't going to change what needs to happen. If the responses to the emergencies are going to be slower, or they're going to entail the use of less firefighters, then this is going to have an impact on operations. Discussing those concerns openly and gaining some agreement on what the new expectations should be is a good way to prevent the overextension, the shortcutting, and the excessive risk-taking that I think are the three things that are likely to happen without changing the operation. The fire department didn't create this economic issue that we're all facing. Therefore, you know, we shouldn't feel guilty about managing the impacts in a way that ensures our firefighter safety. Sure, we're going to feel bad about it, but we shouldn't feel guilty about it. Anytime you feel loss of something valuable to you, maybe you feel guilty about, maybe I could have done something different that would have changed this outcome or that outcome. We have to get beyond that guilt feeling and realize, you know, we didn't create this mess, but we inherited it, and we have to work through it. As you have these discussions about what these impacts mean, it might be worthwhile to work through a scenario. For example, maybe a residential dwelling fire. So you take a battalion chief with a crew of firefighters, and they're going to talk through a scenario of a residential dwelling fire. The first discussion is how we would handle this incident with the resources that the department had when the times were good, you know, before the pre-reduction times, and draw it out, chart it out, about how long it would take for each company to arrive, how many people would be on each company, what each company would be doing, what assignments would be given to them, how long it would take them to get those assignments done with the personnel that they have to work with, and what the results of what the collective results of those efforts would be. And again, we're talking through a hypothetical scenario, or maybe they could even take a real fire that they had, you know, at one time when things were good, and use that as their example. You know, here's this fire on this street, and you know, here's the response times of each of the companies, the staffing of each of the companies, the assignments that were given. You know, pick one that went well when times were good and staffing was good and resources were good, and use that as the baseline. And then take the same scenario and run the hypothetical over again, only this time using reduced resources. So realistically, if you're being real about this, the scenario should change. And depending on the degree of the reductions that your department has had, the scenario may change a lot. So, you know, the staffing levels and response times are two key factors that I think are likely to change if you've come to the point where you're cutting the cutting into the core services. You've probably, you know, reduced staffing, or you've closed companies, which are then reduce or increase response times. So play that and that fire scenario out again with that factor, and then talk through what would it mean to us if we, you know, with today's staffing and response times, how would that impact our safety? How would it impact our strategy? How would it impact our tactics? How would it impact our ability to get things done? How would it impact how long it takes to get things done? How would it impact what we would be asking people to do? And having these meaningful discussions in advance of having the fire that you expect everybody to perform just the way they have before, because that's not going to work well. So, you know, when you're talking about this in, say, a classroom or hypothetical situation, there's far less risk. You know, if you say, well, this didn't work out really well, you know, because of this. Well, you'd want to know about that, you know, in a discussion, in a calm, you know, around a coffee table or in a classroom versus being out at an incident and trying to do it the same way and then realizing, hey, this didn't work out so well because we tried to do the same thing the same way we've always done it with less resources and longer response times, and that didn't work out well, and you might have a near miss or a casualty event. So, you know, these lower staffing, response time delays, these are going to impact the fire progression. They're going to impact the savable lives and when the savable lives become unsavable. And if response times are delayed, they're going to impact the stability of the structure. In other words, summing it all up, the risk-benefit paradigm shifts. In other words, the amount of risk that we could have taken at certain point in time with certain resources, staffing, and certain response times, and a certain benefit, that whole thing then shifts into a new position because staffing levels are less and perhaps response times are higher. It's really not possible for me to script out exactly how this discussion would play out and what changes each department would have to make as a result of having this discussion. There are really just too many variables for me to do that, you know, the configuration of communities and company sizes and whole lots of variables, and every community knows that they have those unique things. However, I want to stress how vitally important it is for firefighter safety to acknowledge and accept that the reduction of core services are a result or a consequence of reduction in staffing and increases in response times. And the sooner an organization gets to the acceptance of that and has meaningful discussions about how to make reductions in street level performance, the closer an organization will be to protecting the safety of the firefighters. Get beyond the denial, the anger, the bargaining, the depression, and get to where you're accepting the fact that we have to do less to ensure firefighter safety. And then meaningfully talk about how, in your organization, the risk-benefit paradigm has shifted into a new location and how you're going to change what you do to make sure that at the end of the shift, all the firefighters go home safely. That's my message. That's my challenge. That's my plea for the organizations out there to please have these discussions and to please adjust the way you do things. Do not try to continue to do the way you always have when you've had a meaningful loss. Acknowledge it and work through it.
Okay, Rich, thank you. And, you know, I'm going to create a thread in the forum when we post this podcast live. So if you're interested in joining a discussion on this particular topic, the changes that you've been forced to make and you know, things that you've done within your department to try to create a better analysis of what your, you know, assignments are capable of handling. So check the podcast player page for a link to that forum page, and we'll try and get a discussion going to see if, you know, departments or those who are from departments have actually what success they've had or what lessons that they've learned. I think it would be interesting to share those with our peers who are listening and also using the forums to talk back and forth and communicate with others in the fire service.
Well, for those who've had success in having those meaningful discussions, I'd like for them to share how they've engaged. You know, what is it meant? How have they done it? How have they meaningfully discussed it? How did they work through it? How did they come to the conclusion about what they would do differently? Because I think that advice really would serve to be helpful to the many others out there that I know are struggling, they're frustrated, they're scared, because what they're hearing is do it the way you always have, and they know that it is just impossible to do that, but they don't know how to get that conversation started. So plea out there to the listeners who have been successful in making those adjustments. Share with others. You know, give the gift of your knowledge and what you've experienced to help others through this tough time.
Okay. All right. So take a look for that. The link to that thread on the podcast player page. You can find that at firehouse.com/podcasts, and then just scroll down for the Leader's Toolbox page, and you'll find it there. So, well, Rich, some great advice. Unfortunately, it's something that has to be shared in this day and age. And looking at how departments are faring for 2011, when a lot of experts said that's when the public safety and local government would really take the hit, that seems to be true. Departments who were kind of skating by this year are under the gun right now for budgets for 2011. So, if you're in a jurisdiction and your neighboring department's facing these issues, please share this show with them. We'll also post a couple of related articles that we've published on the site in the last couple of months on the podcast player page as well. But please share it with them and encourage them to hit the forums or leave comments on the podcast player page to share their insight and share their experiences and what they've learned success that's been successful and not been successful so far.
I can't express where many of us are in the same boat. We think our problems are unique. We think the things that are happening in our town is unique. Our frustrations are unique. But I got to tell you, Pete, as I travel around, I see it's so much the same. And we really need to lean on each other and help each other through this. I just do not want to see fire departments suffering injuries and casualties because they haven't made meaningful adjustments in how they do business when they have such a significant, some of them, a significant reduction in resources. So Let's hope that's not the consequence.
Absolutely not. But we'll try to help out as much as we can to, provide some information. So, Rich, thanks again for, we're glad to have you back, like I said earlier, on a one-on-one show. We look forward to, January. Coming to a new year, some new topics that we haven't touched yet. So tune in early in January for our next podcast. And again, if you are on the road or attending conferences, check out Rich's website, which is on the podcast player page. That's richgasaway.com to see where he'll be. And he'll also be at Firehouse World with us as well. So thank you, Rich. Happy holidays, and wishing you and a happy new year.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam, to you and to all the Firehouse listeners, Pete.
Firehouse World 2011 is the largest fire service event west of the Mississippi and takes place in San Diego, California, February 26th through March 2nd. Register today at firehouseworld.com and be part of the action. You will have access to over 100 training and educational sessions, 350 exhibitors, plus network with over 7,500 firefighters from around the country. This is one event you don't want to miss.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.